Hi, welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me.
Hi,
your host, Adam Richmond. This is the show in which we chat about the movies or films. Sometimes we talk about films, the films we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. And when I say we've, of course, I mean me and my co-host, Mr. Joe Devine.
Today, of course, rather than movies or films, we'll be talking about les films.
Yeah. Un film.
Un petit pois film, por favor. Wait.
Un petit pois.
Do you know, I read something really funny today that was, it was about, you know, Gary Neville, the ex-footballer, now pundit.
No, I'm not familiar with that world. Tell me.
Well, Gary Neville, he was a very famous right back for Manchester United, Adam.
Okay, right, yeah.
And now he's one of the UK's premier football pundits on the television.
Is he premier because he talks about the Premier League?
That's right, yeah. If he was the talking about the Bundesliga, he'd be Bunder pundit.
Well, what would he be if he was talking about the Italian league?
He would be a Serie pundit.
And what would about if he was talking about the American Football League?
Oh, he'd be a major pundit, oh.
And what about the Australian Soccer League?
All right, mate. He's a bloody pundit, mate.
Okay.
Yeah? Do you care to ask about any more?
No. That's
like you won't be able to wait for Antarctica if he was an Antarctica.
Oceana.
That's sort of Australia, isn't it? That's kind of the same thing, really. Yeah, They're all the same.
Okay, so, yeah. Kick on. What am I talking about?
Oh, Gary Neville.
Pun intended. I said kick on.
We're
talking about football.
Yeah. Well, kicking on, when he was, once he was the manager.
Can I ask you, when you make a pun, and you fully intend the pun, how do you decide in your head to say whether you say pun not intended or pun intended? Because I change between... I always mean the pun, always.
Well,
there's never a time where I've not intended the pun on a subconscious level.
I'm not sure about that, but... Oh, on a subconscious level, okay. Well, you could say that about anything, couldn't you? On a subconscious level, but sure.
Yeah, all right. Well, what I'm saying is, in the moment, let's say you've decided, you know you're making a pun. How do you decide whether you would say, you'd be humble and go, oh, pun not intended. Or you're going to lean in and go, pun intended.
Right.
How do you make that choice?
Well, usually I have to say, unfortunately, I've got a disease of the brain whereby the things I say are said before I make any kinds of decision. So usually, whether I've said pun intended or pun not intended, that happens. The decision about whether to say it or not happens after I've said it, you know? And generally, it's sort of tinged with regret by that point.
Okay, I thought I was gonna get like a lovely little Joe Devine tidbit for how to lead my life,
right?
How to conduct myself in a meeting.
I can give you one. How about this? When you're saying pun intended, it sounds from the way you're saying it, because I can't see you, obviously. I can only hear you, like the listener. I feel as though you already know the answer. You already know this tip, okay? But when you say pun intended, it's very important to look around first and then lean in. very, very. Because if you just say pun intended without making any sort of physical gesture to it, people will think you're an ordinary, plain, sort of stiff Jane. Do you know what I'm saying? But if you look at, put one hand, one fist on your hip and then look around a little bit as if to check around.
I know how to say pun intended, mate.
Yeah?
You're talking to Mr. Pun Intended.
Well, I wasn't sure.
I'm asking how you make the choice of whether you say pun intended or say out loud, pun not intended. Because I sometimes do say that, but it's a kind of a disingenuous...
Right, because it was intended.
It's always intended.
I don't say either. I don't acknowledge it.
Great.
Generally, I don't make puns.
Okay.
Because I think they're a low form of comedy.
What were you going to say about Gary Neville?
Oh, Gary Neville. Yeah. So Gary Neville was once the manager of Valencia, a team in Spain. And he had a bit of a rotten run there. It was kind of famous at the time. And when he came back and was a pundit again, it was also... I think it was probably quite embarrassing for Gary Neville. Not that it was all his fault, really. But I read an anecdote today... that said one of the problems with him as manager there was that he didn't speak any Spanish, and most of the team was Spanish, and he's a great communicator in English, but, you know, he sort of loses his best skill if he can't use it with Spanish players. And one day the captain of the team came to him and said, listen, Gary, you really need to try and speak to the team. Do your team talk today in broken Spanish rather than getting it translated by somebody else, because it will make a difference to the players, you know? And he did it, and he was trying to ask them to play very directly. He was saying he wanted like 1, 2, 3 quick passes. But instead of saying 1, 2, 3, he said 1, 2, 3 in French. And I just thought, oh no. Oh, Gary, you know, what a shame. You've really kicked it back in your own goal there, pun intended.
All I was thinking about whenever you said Valencia was this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah. What a payoff.
Valencia. Okay, that's the Decembrists with O Valencia.
Right.
And I just tuned out as soon as you said Valencia.
Great. Great. I thought it was Michael Stipe, to be honest. It sounded like REM to me. But speaking of the Decembrists, they've got a lovely song called The Sporting Life, which is kind of a tie-in to what I was talking about. You know, great song. That's a wonderful song. It's got exactly the same opening drum beat as
the all their songs. All sound the same.
Well, no, but that one specifically, that has the same opening drum beat. So what is the Iggy Pop song in Lust for Life in T2 and Trainspotting? It's got exactly the same.
It does. And then,
instead of Iggy Pop starting to sing, it's I fell on the playing field. You know, so fucking great song that is.
Absolute banger. Yeah,
really good. Anyway, under toi.
Anyway, under toi.
Pun intended.
Under toi.
You know,
Ein, zwei, drei.
Le film.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to the host. And Joe prefers to the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host, and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
On today's episode, we're doing The Artist.
Le Artiste.
Of which I don't think it's really known as that. I don't know why Joe keeps saying that. Because it's directed by a Frenchman and stars a Frenchman and a French lady.
Well, it's a French film. It's produced by French people. It's directed by a Frenchman. It stars two French actors and they're French. And it was made with all French people.
By Canal Plus.
Yeah. Yeah, Canal Plus.
Okay, well, you know, you've heard it here first. Maybe not first. It was made in 2011 and it was directed by Michel Hazanavicius. Hazanavicius, very difficult name.
Hazanavicius. If you were Italian, it would be Hazanavicius.
Hazanavicius.
It'll be Michel as well, probably.
I said Michel, I didn't say Michael.
Oh, well, I was just correcting you. For what I imagined you'd said.
The ghost me. When it's like you're the opposite of me. I do pun intended and you just do unnecessary corrections.
Yeah.
Someone says something and you go, oh, let me just correct you. Even when they haven't made a mistake.
Sure.
You know, when someone says, for example, unarguable.
Yeah.
And you go, inarguable.
Yeah.
They are both actually perfectly acceptable.
Are they really?
Yeah.
And so you've checked that since you said it, have you?
Well, you know, I edited the episode.
You didn't know that at the time, did you? You checked it since.
How embarrassing. It was fine. Not embarrassing. I said the word and then you nitpicked and needled me. And so I thought, sorry, does Joe know something I don't? Turns out you don't.
Right.
Turns out you thought you knew something, which is more embarrassing. Because you heard someone say that. Someone said to you, oh, actually, I think you'll find it's inarguable.
No, that's not what happened.
No, hang on a sec. Let me finish my story.
Let me start my story.
No, let me finish my story and then you tell me your story.
Once you've finished your story, I'm going to start my story.
Yeah, I'm finishing my story.
And that's inarguable.
So you've heard someone in my story. You've heard someone say that. And
your story's so boring and long. Oh, my God. How long is this story going to go on for?
Oh, God, yeah. Scene, prologue.
L'artiste.
So it's 100 mins, which I would say for a film like this is easily 20 minutes too long.
What?
This film should be a pastiche of a silent movie. It's got to be 80 mins, okay? 100 mins,
that's
fuck's
so stupid.
Sake. No, that's just the rule. That's the rule I'm saying. Uh-huh. You know, pastiche. If you're going to do a pastiche,
quote,
do
that's
clock
the
in.
Rule I'm saying.
Just do clocking under, like, for God's sake.
Sure, sure.
It stars Jean Dujardin, Berenice Bejo, John Goodman, James Cromwell, Penelope Ann Miller. You would recognise these faces. They kind of jar, you know, these American faces jar okay. in this French film.
Okay.
I think Joe liked this movie. I'm already getting a sense that Joe liked the movie.
Yeah,
and
I like
here's
the
Letterboxd.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Here's mm-hmm. the Letterboxd. Uh-huh. A breath of fresh vintage air.
That's right.
That's weird. That's a weird thing in caps.
That's what it is.
Hollywood, 1927. As silent movie star Georges Valentin wonders if the arrival of talking pictures will cause him to fade into oblivion, he sparks with Pepe Miller, a young dancer set for a big break. And that is the movie. That's
hey.
Not a movie.
Hey, guy.
It's a pastiche of silent movies and silent cinema. Loving, oh, very loving. It's such a loving homage to this old-aged silent movie of the age, hallowed age. And this is what all silent movies sound like. I'm going to play something else now. This is what all silent movies sound like.
Uh-huh.
That is the sound of every single silent movie you'll ever see. I know that because I just popped on a Charlie Chaplin and it wasn't even a silent one. He talks in it. But this is the score for every single black and white movie, no silent movie ever. Oh, it's so boring, isn't it? So boring. Have I sent you to sleep, Joe? Have I sent you to sleep
I
yet?
Hate you.
Oh, God, strings. Charlie Chaplin wrote this music.
I mean, it's wonderful music.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So
you didn't even fade it out manually. You just pressed stop, didn't you? That's how much disrespect you have for that beautiful art form. You just pressed stop on your mobile phone. Sickening.
So you got me on this. I feel like I've been on 11 in terms of my speed of chat and vibe. So I'm just gonna like pass over the baton to my co-host, Mr. Joe Devine, for a little bit. Chat to me about The Artist and your experience of watching it today and watching it in the past.
Right. Well, I really like and respect the film The Artist. I think it's a tremendous achievement. I think it has its drawbacks. I think it's only really watchable once a decade. I don't think there could really be another film made like it in that sense. I think pastiche is probably a fair word to use to describe it. Although I do think it goes beyond.
Fun to say again and again, isn't it?
If you keep saying it over and over again, I'm going to find it quite irritating because I think the film goes above and beyond just an imitation. I think it also adds to the format, and it's a very clever and sharp film with beautiful production quality. And I think there are a lot of really, really fun moments in this film. It's charming. It's captivating. If you're not, you know, completely incapable of emoting, then you will enjoy watching this film. And I've enjoyed it the sort of three or four times that I've seen it. I went to see this with my cousin Helen in the cinema when it came out. And I remember when we left, we were both sort of, it was one of those films where we were almost just silent when we left because it was just a great experience. There was nothing to say. It was just a wonderful film to enjoy. And let me tell you, there's a moment towards the end of the film for those listeners listening now who've watched it and remember it. There's this lovely moment near the end of the film where all the music stops, the score of the kind that you've just played there, all of the music stops, all the sound stops. And it's the quietest it's ever been in a cinema when I watched that scene of a few minutes. I thought it was breathtaking when I first saw it, and I'd never seen anything quite like it. So I think it's a great achievement. Well done to everyone involved. And I shall I shall allow some of your criticisms, but not all. Not all shall pass here. Like Gandalf, I shall stand on the bridge, and I will tell you, Balrog, to fuck off down that hole, okay? And then I'll smite you on a mountainside if you really want.
Yeah, no, it is very admirable. The rule is mine. You know, if you didn't like something, you've watched it at the wrong time. I've watched this at the wrong time this week.
Right.
I thought it was okay when it came out, when there was so much chatter about it. I think I was broadly like a bit nonplussed. I thought it was fine. Sorry, Dennis is meowing to fuck. I just got to let him out. I tell you what, as annoying as my cat is, it's not as annoying as the dog is in this fucking movie.
Listen,
the
mate.
The artist.
Listen.
The dog. This film, right, when this film came out, I was going to say something nice, and I've just decided, oh, for fuck's sake, fuck that. This was the year of the dog. Everyone was banging on about this stupid dog. And in this movie, what is wrong with this grown man carrying around a dog like it was a baby? It's so sad and pathetic. Like, I don't understand why I'm watching a movie which pitches a really rich, successful man, and I'm supposed to be sad about his quandary of, oh no, the thing I love doing isn't going to be a thing anymore. I just thought, I can't give a toss about this. I can't give a toss about the death of silent cinema. The whole, like, thrust of the movie, its argument is that, you know, the young are coming. There's a whole scene where the young actress is giving an interview, and she's being all cocky, and she's on the ups, and Jean Dujardin is on the downs, and she's having an interview, and he's overhearing it, and she says, "Oh, you know, make way for the young, you know, get out, get these old geezers out with their mugging on camera," and he overhears, and then he gets up, and he's all bruised and sad, and he says to her, "I'm just making way for the young." And you're like, the film wants you to be sad for this fucking loser. And I don't feel sad for him. I'm thinking, yes, you old, shriveled up nothing. You make way for the young. This is what we're supposed to do. And the film's whole premise, what it's asking us to believe, is I just don't. I just think it's so sad and like self-aggrandizing. It loves old things and it's like, forget it, move on, let's move on. Silent cinema is dead. That's why the invention of sound, like, fucking, it's like made it all loads better. And so however artful and loving it is, it just doesn't get me. There's some lovely little scenes where they're just doing some lovely silent cinema where, like, say, Berenice Bejo, she does a thing where she goes up to a suit on a clothes hook, and it's a man's suit, and she's flirting with it, and she puts her arm through the man's sleeve, and it's like she's pretending to hold herself, and it's a beautiful shot. There's so much artistry here, and I wouldn't deny it that, but in its bones, it's just this. It's this. Michel Hazanavicius. I'll call him Michel. Michel is just this old retrograde, old French git, and he just needs to move on and get with the times. So I just can't get on board with it, and I'm just at a remove emotionally as a result. Do you know what I mean?
Who hurt you? Who's responsible for this? This is sad. I'm sad.
Why is it sad?
Because everyone else is able to put some of these minor issues aside or acknowledge them as part of the form or part of the cleverness of the conceit, you know, that it is a lightweight story where the main actor, the main character is a bit of a fool, and where the inclusion of really deep and considered plotline is not necessary. It didn't appear in most silent cinema, right? Like, people are either able to set these issues aside or respect them as part of the ingredients and still enjoy them anyway. I think you already nailed it. Look, you've watched it at the wrong time. There's no way on earth that this isn't generally a charming film that people enjoy watching. I'm so sorry you had a bad time, but it's your fault. Or it's the fault of whoever hurt you, you know.
I didn't have a bad time. Me saying I watched it at the wrong time is me being generous when I slag it off. because I was perfectly charmed rewatching it. I just could not understand why anyone would give a shit about it. It's the whole thing is a one trick pony. I would, you know, instead of just telling me that silent movies were good and with this pastiche, just I'll watch a good silent movie. You know?
Yeah, except it's, you won't, and people don't.
I will, and,
this,
and, I have,
and then
I,
everyone watched this, and it won loads of Oscars.
And then they didn't go and watch.
But what's that got to do with
films?
The film? That's not got anything to do with the film.
You're the one who said it. Like I'm saying, watch a good silent movie, and you're like, oh no, everyone watched this.
Yeah, but I'm saying no one will do that. What's your problem with it? Like that it shouldn't exist for some. You talk about it as though you assign it with some kind of agenda that it doesn't have. You were imagining all of this based on the critics or what people have said about it since, or people saying nice things about it because they like it. And then you're raging against the world that just doesn't exist. You're like a 60-year-old person on Facebook getting furious at things that aren't real.
No, I disagree. I'm not saying it's got an agenda. I'm just saying what it's a shit copy of something that's actually good.
That's very unfair.
Well, it is.
It's an evolution on the art form anyway. Like there's almost all of the jokes in it are little meta nudge wink wink jokes about it being a silent film. It's not just a copy of a silent film. That's why I said it. A pastiche is sort of fair enough, broadly speaking, but it's much more than just an imitation of silent cinema. It's just not really fair to call it that.
I don't see what else it is.
I mean, it's a fun, charming film with very clever ideas and produced beautifully, and it looks amazing. And I think most people enjoyed it enough to be moved by it.
Right, and I'm saying, but I'm lifting the hood up, and I've already, the thing that's bugging me about it, one of them, you're like, oh, you're nitpicking. I don't think it is a nitpick.
I didn't say nitpicking.
Okay, well, you said, oh, who hurt you? The filmmaker, the director, his argument, and he's got one, the argument is that old things and silent cinema, we've lost something. That's what the premise of the film is. That's what he's saying. Okay, art has a message.
What? With the film?
Huh?
With the film, that's what he's saying.
Yeah, it's deeply nostalgic, but it's not just that. So it says things. His position is he's got a viewpoint, and I don't like the viewpoint of the movie. The other viewpoint of the movie that I don't like is that the young actress who becomes famous, more famous than Jean Dujardin, played by Bérénice Bejo. I've written the quote down because it fucking annoyed the shit out of me. Jean Dujardin, the artist. Jean Dujardin. He meets her and she really looks up to him.
Bérénice Bejo.
Bérénice Bejo. She wants to... Oh, Bérénice Bejo. Bejo Dujardin.
She's Argentinian, so it actually might be Bejo.
Bejo. She's fantastic in it. They're both great.
Do you know she's married to the director, Michel?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. They were all in they were all in French films together before, apparently, in some parody movies.
Oh yeah, the OSS, the spy parody movies.
Yeah, yeah, those ones.
I saw the first one. Can't remember a thing about it. So Jean says to Bérénice, she wants to be an actress. He says, to be an actress, you need to have something that others don't. And he draws a beauty mark on her. So the man, this great artist, the man gives her, this young ingenue, he gives her the thing that will then make her famous. Without this, the generosity and insight and amazing man to do that, to give her that, like both advice and literal beauty mark, she wouldn't be famous. The film's premise is that a woman can only be famous or successful if she's had help from a man. And you can disagree with that.
I really do disagree.
You can do, but like that's what I see. And she's just totally enthralled with him, and the film loves him. And I just think the whole film is just so syrupy.
It's certainly got stuck in your craw.
When was the last time you heard from your father?
Daddy.
You've come in real hot, Richmond. You're piping hot at 11. You've come in, you've put the oven, you've preheated the oven on 500 degrees.
Yeah.
You know? And now when I open it, the inside has melted and it's all over my hands.
Yeah, no, I've ruined it.
Let me just say, I'm just going to say to you.
I can imagine what nice things anyone would have to say about it beyond, oh, it's charming.
I'm going to say some now, okay? And yeah. Without wanting this, I don't want this to turn into a, here's what I think the movie meant, here's what you think the movie meant. But just because you already said it, I just need 30 seconds, okay?
No, yeah, I've said, yeah, absolutely.
Here we go.
I have a rebuttal.
I don't think the film is saying, it might be saying that we've lost something in the past. That's not my reading of it. My reading of it is that the time moves on and Jean Dujardin finds a place in the new world. You know, I think it's a sort of refreshing look forward. I don't think it's a nostalgic film sad about the loss of silent cinema. I think it's a film that uses that time period to look forward and say it's going to be okay. And secondarily, I think that the whole notion of Jean Dujardin putting a little beauty spot on Berenice Becho's face and saying that's all you need, that's a joke about Hollywood. When I watch that, I laugh at it. I think that's a funny joke to see this as this tiny thing is going to be the thing that makes you, you know, like, or the notion that all you need to do is be beautiful, or this one, you know, like, he's got his dog. That's what's different about him to everybody else. It's just silly. Like, it makes me think it's mocking Hollywood as opposed to making some kind of statement that all a woman needs is a man's advice in order to make it. That's not how I read it at all. I'm not saying your interpretation is wrong. I'm just saying perhaps one of the ways I've been able to enjoy the film is by not having it.
Well, you know, that's really... I like that. I like that. That's a good... That's a very valid take home from it as well. You could argue it's satirizing Hollywood.
Not just a take away, a take home. I'm going to take it away, but then I'm going to take it home as well.
We all have. I don't want to say that's a very generous viewpoint because
I knew that's where you were going. You were going to say you really wanted to say generous, but you knew what kind of reaction that would rile from me. I could hear it. I could hear it in the empty space you left. So could the audience. So
yeah, no, it's
it was generous of you not to say it. To be honest, it's
it was very generous of me. Mm. The other thing I just kept bugging me about it. Uh-huh. It was I just kept thinking the film Babylon has made this film thoroughly irrelevant.
Sure,
and I just couldn't stop thinking about Babylon and how I'd rather be watching a 3-hour Babylon than 100 Min's. The artist.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the artist's fault.
Sure.
But that's all I could think about. And then I was thinking, I haven't done any research to this, but like how many movies, if any, are there that have been made thoroughly redundant by other films?
It's a good question. It's a good question. Because you could argue, in your world then, would you argue that whilst the artist has been made redundant by Babylon, Singing in the Rain hasn't? Despite the fact that they're all films set around the time of talkies taking over in Hollywood.
Right, yeah. And I've never seen Singing in the Rain.
Oh, you should watch it. It's fantastic. It's in exactly this world. And Babylon is, as much as I really enjoyed Babylon, it's a very, very different film. It's doing a lot of work to try to recapture, in my opinion, a lot of the energy from Singing in the Rain, which is a film which directly contends with the moo or the transition from silent films to talkies. And one of the funny elements of it is that there's an actor or an actress who has this really grating, awful voice, and she's gone from being a huge star in silent movies to struggling to make it work in talkies or having to have someone dub over her in talkies. And there's some, it's a bit reminiscent, or Brad Pitt's character in Babylon is a bit reminiscent of that. Plus it's got the song, I'm singing in the rain, and some absolutely delightful, it's a magnificent film, Singing in the Rain.
Oh, I will, I mean, maybe I won't. I think it's one of those movies like Citizen Kane, which I have seen, but you just think, oh, it's too late, right? It's too late for me to sing.
I don't think it is. I think it's one of those ever-present classics. It would be like if you hadn't seen Casablanca and you sat down on Sunday afternoon and watched it. I don't think your enjoyment is reduced by its nature. It's one of those firmly in the center of the unmoving canon. It's in the unmoving part of the canon, and I think it's immune to the wearing of time. Do you know what I mean?
I do, but that's the great question. I don't. Maybe it's not. Movies are reflections of their time. They feel alive and they speak to the people who watch them at the time. They're made by people at the time. These aren't time travelers. And then I think there's a certain point where they become ossified. Like art, there is a point where it kind of stops living.
Right,
And it is then just viewed by later generations and then just as this artifact of time. When it was made, it ceases to mean that and have that kind of vibrance and relevance. And then it's something that is like, oh, this is a product of its time. This is what was going on there. And so it can't really ever matter as much or be useful. Like when I try and tell someone to watch The Usual Suspects or Memento, I'm talking about films that are dead, you know, to the young viewer. Like that film doesn't mean anything to them because it wasn't out. They might like it, but it's not the same.
Well, it's not theirs.
The way the story's told and like the pace of it, also just like the kind of cinematic language is obviously is of the time. And so, you know, you compare the storytelling language now with films in the 90s, it's different. It just reminds me that time is slipping through my fingers and the things that I like they're stuck. I'm stuck in the past and new stuff is not really... I mean, new stuff can come out and I can get into it.
Uh-huh.
But...
Like The Bourne Legacy.
Like The Bourne Legacy. Like Trainspotting 2.
Yeah, like T2.
Do you know what I mean? I feel like I'm not getting in. I can't feel
I do
like
know I what you mean, but I want to say that...
I'm not getting it.
Listen, two things. First thing, there are films that stay the test of time, okay? There just are. There are films that I've watched for the first time in the last 5 years that were released 80 years ago and are magnificent and mean something to me. And some of my favourite films and some of my favourite experiences of watching films have been films that were released in the 1950s and the 1960s, and these things mean as much to me, I think, perhaps as were I to have watched them at the time. They certainly don't mean any less to me than films that were released today do. One of the most famous quotes probably about this notion of films that remain in the canon, stories that are undying, was by Angela Lansbury, of course. I think you know to what I refer. Tale as old as time. Yeah? Tune as old as song. Barely even friends. Then somebody bends. Unexpectedly. Da, 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 da. Just a little change. Yeah? Small to say the least, both a little scared, neither one prepared. Beauty and the Beast. And the second thing...
Bonjour. Nice sweater.
I've got a game for you, Adam.
Wash the egg away.
This game I've got for you is called Is It a Gimmick or a Genuine Artistic Achievement? Okay? A bit like Tosh or Not that we played.
Tosh, yeah. And like the gimmick here is it's a modern movie, but they've made it all silent.
Well, that's the gimmick with the artist. You're right. The gimmick with the artist is that it's a silent film, and they're sort of playing off that notion. And one might say that's a gimmick. Let me just quickly get the definition of the word gimmick up so that we can refer to that when we need it, because we're going to need it during this game.
it's pastiche.
Well,
hey, but it's still charming. Oh,
a trick or device intended to attract attention, publicity, or trade. Okay, so in this instance, the gimmick, the purpose of it, you could argue with the artist, is, well, the reason, the way we're going to get people to watch this film is it's a silent movie. That's the gimmick. And then they come to the film because they know of the gimmick, you know? But therefore, there's some kind of, there's a sort of insinuation there that the gimmick isn't sort of necessarily totally necessary for the film. I think that's difficult in the case of the artist. But we're going to start with the artist. Gimmick or no?
We need to, no, also, we need to add a little addendum. Just because that's what the word gimmick means, I think we need to enrich what we mean by it. Like,
well, what do you mean by the word gimmick? If you say that the artist is a bit of a gimmicky film, what do you mean by gimmicky film?
I never said
no,
that.
No, were this you to say
word,
it?
This is the first time the word gimmick has reared its ugly head. I'd never say this film is a gimmicky film. But I think because it's a good lovely word and I want to play the game, let's create a meaning. Let's flesh out what we mean by gimmick, because if we like, there's something inherent in the dictionary definition, which is some kind of intention on behalf of the makers of a film to say, this is why we're going to make it silent, because this is what this will get people to watch.
Just to be clear, Adam, yesterday at 8:34, can't believe people went mental for this gimmicky shit. Oh, wait, actually I can, in reference to the film The Artist. 13 minutes into it, fuck me, it's so fucking boring.
Right, okay, but I said that in private. I didn't say gimmick once. We're 40 minutes in.
No, but I only developed the game gimmick because you called it gimmicky shit. And now you're here, okay, like saying you never said it, giving me a hard time about using the word or attributing the word to you. I'm like, hang on, I'm sure no. You said gimmick. And I've
hey,
so it said, is. You did said. Say gimmick.
I didn't say it. I didn't
you
say
wrote
it. Keep stop saying the word said. You wrote there gimmick. We go. Wrote it. Okay, I forgot that, but I purely meant in the recent past. What I was meant, I wasn't trying, this wasn't a needle on you.
No, I thought, what? No, it's just, you were so aggressively defended the idea that you used it. You attacked me for suggesting that you had, and I was so confused from it. I was like,
because
swear
I thought
you
said were, it. Whatever. Okay, yes, I've wrote the word gimmick. Gimmicky, fine. What I mean to say is, we can't imply... intention on behalf of any of the filmmakers of the movies we're going to be talking about. So that makes any time that I would then say this is gimmicky, the game's broken, right?
By which you mean the bit where it says a trick or device intended to attract attention.
Exactly.
We're going to have to tweak that a little bit.
We're going to have to change the meaning of the word gimmick. It's like some friends of mine, we like to debate who's a charlatan or not.
Sure.
Who's a charlatan? Nick Cave. Oh, is he a charlatan or not?
No.
Stephen Fry. Is he a charlatan? It's quite fun. You can say, and it's very specific. You wouldn't just say, oh, Ricky Gervais, because he's shit. It's got a very specific thing that you're trying to nail with the charlatan game.
I think I know what that is in this case. Can I proffer something?
What about the charlatan
no,
game? No, about the gimmick game. I didn't mean to confuse it. Yeah, let's forget
not the charlatan
back on track.
Game. I think what I want to ask here, I have a list of films, all of which have, quote, a thing. Okay. And in the case of The Artist, that thing is that it is a pastiche to silent movies. Okay. And what I really want to know is, Is that a sort of, minus the intentionality element, is it a bit of a gimmick in the sense that it doesn't really make the film any better? Or does it all work together beautifully, organically? And I think as I go through the list, it will become clearer what is meant by that, okay?
Yeah, I'll tell you what I mean by gimmick. Thanks. It's roughly what you said, but it's not quite what you've said. Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't you tell me as we go through the game?
Yeah.
So starting... We're not going to do The Artist. I think we know what you think about that already. I'm going to start...
No, wait. No,
oh, you
okay.
want to do The Artist?
I do, because I WhatsApped you...
Privately.
Privately. Not on... I can't believe you're airing my dirty laundry on a public podcast. I use the word gimmick.
You use the word gimmicky shit.
Gimmicky shit. Because it felt like gimmicky shit. It's like, this is such a gimmick. It felt so gimmicky. I did warm to it, and there are some lovely moments, and I thought, oh, okay, it's admirable and it earns it. But when I said gimmick, I meant gimmick, and I probably wouldn't call it gimmicky. So yeah, it gets in.
Okay, so it's not gimmick.
Not gimmick.
Okay, it's a gimmick or no? It's no. Excellent. Okay, fine. The next film on this
list... Just to keep us friends.
Yeah. Very important. The next film on this list from 2014 is Boyhood, which of course was filmed over 12 years with the same actors aging naturally. The real-time aging process is the thing in this case.
Gimmick.
You think it's a gimmick?
Gimmick.
Gimmick. Gimmick. Gimmick. Gimmick. Gimmick. Yeah, gimmick. Fair enough. Okay. How about this one? Also from 2014, Birdman, designed to look like a single unbroken shot with meta commentary on acting and an unreliable narrator. This one-take illusion and self-referential storytelling is the thing. Is the thing here. The one-take illusion and the self-referential storytelling is the thing.
Yeah, I'd say gimmick, but like in less of an eggy way than I did about Boyhood.
Yeah.
It's unnecessary. Like, there's no reason why that needed to be one take other than the sheer, oh, look, I've done it, and this is all looks like it's one take.
Well, it kind of matched the pace and tone of the film, didn't it? I like that, you know, there was also the jazz drummer throughout in some scenes, and
yeah, I like that.
There was this increasing feeling of like destabilization and, in you know, craziness until he ultimately jumps out of a window. It definitely works tonally for me. So in that sense, I can understand why they've chosen to do it. I think it would have been a very different film without it.
But it's not all one take.
No, but it's made to feel as though it is.
Right, so it's not even the thing that it is. There are films that are done in one whole take. So it's a gimmick.
I don't know. I don't really like the film Birdman that much. But I do enjoy the, you know, films that are either true one shot, Adam, or, you know, made to appear as though they are, because I think they can have a very nice effect on the viewer. But I'm fine to say either way, I don't really mind. It's your game to say gimmick or no, and you've said gimmick. So, moving on to the next film, 2017. You'll be able to guess the name of this one when I tell you the action, editing, and choreography are all synchronized to the soundtrack. The music integration is the thing. It's the film Baby Driver.
I don't know, I kind of want to reject that. I mean, as an entrance to the game.
It was the thing that everyone talks about in the press of the film. It was like it was the clever new thing they did. It was like it was, as far as I can remember, it was the selling point for the film.
He's cut it in time to the music. I just would have thought, like, I think again, like, people were talking about something that other films just do anyway, like people cut movies in time to match the music.
And it's the choreography of the whole film. So it's every time a character like makes a noise with his keys, or every time he taps the wheel of the car. It's like it's not just the music of the film, it's all the editing and the pacing of the whole thing is in line with the score. I think it was supposed to be like the first time it had ever been done.
Right. I don't think anyone went to see it on that basis, so I guess it can't be a gimmick, because I don't think anyone would give a shit.
Fair enough. Rubbish film anyway. You know.
That's what I mean. Like, yeah, like that's something for irrelevant film critics to write about.
Okay, here's one.
For two paragraphs before they actually then say whether the film's any good or not.
Told in reverse, making the audience experience memory loss alongside the protagonist. The structure is the thing. It's Memento from 2000. Gimmick or no?
that's a good one.
Dunkirk, 2017. Three interwoven timelines unfolding at different speeds. We talked about this last week. The non-linear storytelling is the thing. I think I know you don't think that's a gimmick, because we talked about it at length last week.
We didn't really touch on it. We got so waylaid by something else, but you already covered this. You answered why it's not, better than I could. I didn't even think of it.
Sin City, hyper-stylized, high-contrast comic book visuals that mimic the graphic novel. The visual aesthetic is the thing here.
No, that's not a gimmick, because it just matches the aesthetic of the comic book, so...
What about this one? From 2015, a first-person action movie shoot shot entirely from the protagonist's POV. Like a video game, the perspective is the thing in Hardcore Henry. Yeah,
I tried watching that. Unwatchable.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Gimmick. That's a pure gimmick.
Pure gimmick movie. Here's another one I think is a pure gimmick movie, although it's not for the same reasons. Long, unbroken shots of a silent ghost under a bedsheet, emphasizing time and grief. The stillness and simplicity is the thing. It's a ghost story from 2017 where a woman eats a pie for, I think, 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's a gimmick.
Gimmick. The gimmick for me, when I included that one...
Indie gimmicks are worse, yeah, I think. Yeah. Indie gimmicks are worse. Indie
gimmick. The gimmick for me, because I added this one in, ChatGPT didn't give me this one. I said, because I remember it was shot like Instagram. It's in a square. It's in a 1:1 aspect ratio. And I always remember thinking, this is bullshit. Fuck off, you know? And then the last one, definitely not a gimmick. Rotoscoped animation over live action footage, giving it a dreamlike, surreal quality. The animation style is the thing with Waking Life, 2001. Not a gimmick.
Not a gimmick.
Oh, man. What a beautiful film that is.
What do you take from the... There's a bit where Jean Dujardin is down... He's ruined, okay? He's been wiped out.
Yeah.
And he hasn't had a job in ever. He's had to sell all his stuff.
Yeah.
He's lost everything.
The stock market has crashed. It's 1929.
Oh, no. Oh, God, we feel so bad for this rich, talented guy.
Sure.
To be bought so down low.
I know.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no. How will he survive? Well... Partly how he'll survive is his chauffeur, played by James Cromwell, that'll do pig, just carries on working for him.
Yeah, because he loves him so much.
Right, okay.
Because he's a good boss.
This is what the working class do.
Yeah.
The working class just carry on working for their betters.
Oh, well, just like Anthony Hopkins, of course.
In the remains of the day.
Well, in the classic example of the working class just keep working for their Nazi betters.
But he's torn up about it. That's a whole book, man. That's a whole book where he realizes the error of his ways.
Yeah.
I don't believe that there's a book written about James Cromwell's character over maybe 200 pages where he really reinterrogates. Hang on a sec.
Yeah.
I worked for free for a French-speaking silent star in Hollywoodland.
Yeah.
What do you think about it? Is there a message there, you know, or is it just, it's just a funny little joke? It's just a funny little joke for the thickos.
I think it's a nice...
Also, you were chuckling like you knew what I was going to say.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think it's a nice sort of thing there to help me, the viewer, go, yeah, this guy's a good guy. Because he's a little naughty, a little pesky from time to time, isn't he? Doesn't he play it hard with John Goodman, the Hollywood movie executive, the big producer who owns the studio, where he says, no, Mr. Goodman, I will not do this movie unless I get my way, a.k.a. unless Pepe Miller can be in the film. And he always breaks, of course, the John Goodman character. So there's a little bit of peskiness there. And also the film opens with this idea that Jean Dujardin loves the limelight, and he doesn't want to share it with his co-stars. You know, he wants to revel in the celebration.
His female co-star. Yeah, all she wants co-star. Is a little bit of limelight, and he's like, fuck you, no. You stupid woman. It's
not.
It's milked. It's quite funny, but at the same time,
sure.
She's supposed to be this uptight, angry woman. Like, oh, no. Come on. Oh, shaking their fists. It's like, you're being a... Share the limelight, mate. You're being a dick. Stop being such a dick.
Well, do you know what it made me think of, Adam? It made me think
too?
Of the class.
Did it make you think of the Me Too movement?
No, it didn't. It didn't, no.
Did it make you think of Time's Up?
No, it didn't make me think of Time's Up. Time's Up?
Did it make you think of 9/11?
It did, but that's not what I was going to say. It made me think of the classic cultural differences between Americans and Europeans, you know? You know the classic cultural differences between Americans and Europeans, for example? Europeans always nude, having sex in threes only, and also they smell and they're poor, but they've got class and history, yeah? Whereas Americans are richer with their white teeth, but they don't have any real emotions, and they love capitalism so much that they need all those churches because it's so hard for them to cling on to their souls as they bomb the rest of the world. You know what I'm saying? The cultural differences between America and Europe. And I just wondered what your favourite sort of cultural differences between America and Europe are.
You've come here and you've brought good and wealth, but you have also brought your bad habits as a backslider. You've lusted after women, and you have abandoned your child. Your child that you raised. You have abandoned all because he was sick, and you have sinned. So say it now. I am a sinner. Say it louder. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
Louder, Daniel. I am a sinner.
I am a sinner.
I am sorry, Lord.
I am sorry, Lord.
I want the blood.
I want the blood.
You have abandoned your child.
I've abandoned my child.
I will never backslide.
I will never backslide.
I was lost, but now I am found.
I was lost, but now I'm found.
I have abandoned my child.
I've abandoned my child.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my child. I've abandoned my boy.
Beg for the blood!
Give me the blood, Lord, and let me get away!
Do you accept Jesus Christ as your Savior?
Yes, I do.
Hey, do you want to play the, hi, it's me, I'm Kevin, can you beat me, I'm Kevin Bacon game?
I would love to. It's all anyone is talking about on my letterbox comments.
Is it?
It's like, oh, this game. Ah, yeah, they're all over it.
Well, that's nice.
So I look forward to the various emails saying, I can't believe you fucked it on that one. Ow, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, that will happen.
Imagine, this is all imagined in my head. No one cares enough to even think of me, which is even worse.
Yeah. Well, let's welcome them all again and play today's Hi, It's Me, I'm Can You Beat Me, I'm Kevin Bacon game. The two people that I would like you to connect today, Adam, are Josh Brolin and Jean Dujardin, okay? And for the listeners who are joining us for the first time in this game, here are the rules. Adam has to find connections between these two actors. So, for example, actor A is in a film with someone who's in a film with someone who's in a film with actor B. And that would be a connection of three, because it's three films. Now, the trick here is Adam doesn't have to do it in the shortest possible route, but he does have to try to beat my route. And he doesn't know my route before he guesses. So there's a little bit of stakes there for you. Now, Adam, what do you think? This one on the surface feels tricky, but is it as hard as you think?
Well, it's not tricky because, I mean, even if you just went off the artist, you've got American Doorways.
That's true.
You know, you've got John Goodman and James Cromwell.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
Which opened you up to all kinds of manner of things. But he's also in, he pops up in Wolf of Wall Street, and he pops up in Monuments Men. So we've got your classic movie you forgot classic characters in there. You've got Leo again. You've got George. Jean Dujardin isn't a problem. It's just like, can you get to, what's Josh Brolin been in? I mean, that's the game.
I know.
And he's been in loads of stuff.
That's the game.
He's been in True Grit. He's been in No Country for Old Men. He's been in Goonies. Oh, I mean, this is, yeah, it's pretty big. This is bog standard. Okay, so we're going to go, Jean Dujardin was in The Artist with John Goodman.
Yeah.
John Goodman was in The Big Lebowski with Jeff Bridges.
Uh-huh.
And Jeff Bridges was in True Grit with Josh Brolin.
Oh, it's a beautiful route, Adam. That's three. And guess what?
You did it in three?
No, I did it in four. You beat me. You beat me. Here was my route, if you're interested. I started with Jean Dujardin as well in Wolf of Wall Street with Leo DiCaprio. I was hoping you might have forgotten that he was in that film, but you didn't. You already mentioned it. Leo, of course, was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt's in Oceans with George Clooney, and George Clooney's in Hail Caesar with Josh Brolin.
You're getting to George. I mean, you could just do Jean Dujardin Monuments Men.
Oh, I didn't know he was in there.
And that's George Clooney.
Right, that would have been good, wouldn't it?
And then George Clooney's in Hail Caesar. That's two. George Clooney's in Hail Caesar with...
Right.
I forget, what's John Goodman in Hail Caesar? We did that, didn't we?
John Goodman? Is he in Hail Caesar? Josh Brolin?
Josh Brolin. Sorry, yeah.
Josh Brolin is the Hollywood studio exec fixer guy. He's like the main, you know, the guy who's... trying to
yes, he's the main star of that. Sorry, I've for some reason I was gone to John Goodman. I went back to John Goodman.
No, that's okay. There's a lot of different male actors in this story here.
So it's two. You can do it. It's in two.
Apparently you can do it in two, and we didn't realise. But yeah, I mean, we're going to find on the Oracle of Bacon now, we're going to find if there's a shorter route than two. You'll probably dismiss it fairly as not a real route. But let's find out. The number's two. So the different route that was taken here was Josh Brolin was in Inherent Vice with Charlie Morgan, who was in The Wolf of Wall Street with Jean Dujardin.
No, sorry. Who's this Charlie Morgan cunt?
Who's Charlie Morgan? Let me tell you. Charlie Morgan is an actor who is known for playing in four films. And
no. Let's play the box office game.
Let's play the box office game. Now, I'm excited to find out what you think this movie done cost, done took on its opening weekend, and done gross worldwide, Adam Richman. Let's start with budget brackets estimated, please, for the film Les Artistes.
Well, it's a Euro flick, so it's not going to be Hollywood money. It's got some American stars in. It looks good, but I reckon they still made it for let's say $12 million.
Very close, Mr. Richmond. It was $15
million. Ooh, very good.
Very good.
It's all on screen.
It is all
Hats
on screen.
Hats off.
I mean, yeah,
to the artist.
It's maybe that's why they didn't have more of those lovely produced moments. Now, opening weekend, US and Canada. Here's a thought. It came out on November the 27th, 2011. So I suppose the question here is, when did it start to gather speed? Had it already started to when it was released, or was it sort of only in those weeks after release? Hard to know unless you were there. What do you think?
Well, if I know Harvey Weinstein, and thankfully I didn't and don't, although when I was at Cannes, I was stood in a lift with him.
Really?
That's another one of my stories.
Jesus.
Let's say, like, I don't know, maybe 300,000?
Oh, very close. 204,000. You know,
I'm doing very well today.
So close in the sense that you're only 100,000 away, far in the sort of sense of that it, of the percentage. But that's fine. That's
not what we're looking at here. When the number's that small, that's as good as a bullseye.
Yeah, you have said that before. Yeah,
that's absolutely true.
Gross worldwide. What do you think about gross worldwide?
Well, this is the tricky one.
This is the one. Because we know it went on to win 5 Oscars, and 3 of them were biggies. And he took them back later.
Joe's made himself laugh.
He said, when he took them back, he said, French people play him close like butter plays toast, you know? And then he just took him and ran.
Yeah.
He was dead already.
Well, it's one of those films that everyone got told they should go and see, and they went to see it like good little children.
Yep.
Good little, oh, I must see this because it won Oscars.
Like you.
I've got no imagination.
And me.
No, I didn't go and see it because of that.
What did you go and see it because of?
Because I had to see it so I could then point at other people who had seen it for those reasons. If I hadn't seen it. I couldn't have said anything.
It's never stopped you before. But go on, what do you think? Gross worldwide.
It's going to do boffo box office. I want to say 300 million, so I'm going to say 300 million.
Not quite that much. It did 133 million.
Oh, that's massively overcooked, that guess. Jesus.
Well, you know, it was piping hot. So it's hard to know, really. But yeah, just 133. I guess Silent was still too hard to sell to some.
Wait! Stop! Stop! Turn around! Turn around, take a step!
Okay, let's wrap this show up. Let's pick next week's flick.
Oh, please.
It's the let's pick next week's flick time.
Yeah.
Where one of us reads out a list of movies they forgot in the hope of catching out the other one on a movie they forgot. It's my turn this week. Joe got me on The Artist. And I'm going to get him. If I don't get him, then we will go to our communal list, which has been populated by flicks that listeners have emailed us. And you can send us your own suggestions and any other kind thoughts to the movies. No, it's not the movies. It's just send it to us. moviesyouforgot@gmail.com. And here we go. All right, let's try and get this guy. Let's try and get this fucker.
I'm ready.
Solo, a Star Wars movie.
Mm.
I fancy doing that. It's the most plum forgot Star Wars flicks. He doesn't want to do it. Why do you not want to do it? Or do you not feel like I've got you? Which is it?
No, I would say you've probably got me. It's not like completely plum, because I did all of the Star Wars films about 2 years ago, and I watched all the new. I hadn't watched the new ones, and I watched them all. I did it all in order with the prequels and the one-offs in the correct sort of universe timeline order. And I remember thinking Solo was okay. I remember thinking it was better than lots of the reviews said it was.
Yeah, this is why I think we should do it.
Yeah, but I have forgotten it in the sense that I'm now trying to recall. I think it is the English guy who's the villain, right? The what's his name? Paul Bettany? Is Paul Bettany the villain?
Maybe. I think so, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So what I'm going to say is...
Sounds like...
I think it's not plum.
No,
well, it's a forgot partial. You forgot. So it's partial. It's well, it's, yeah, minor plum.
Whiffs of plum?
There's scent of plum. Whiffs would suggest that there's a little liquid in that scent, but I'm just going to say it's just scent of plum, I would say. So it's more than enough for you to be a success on, but I wouldn't mind hearing a couple more. What do you think? And if you don't get me, then let's do Solo.
But then I'd be ruining the surprise of some of my other films.
I know, but I just sort of really want to give myself an opportunity to not watch that.
Okay, well, I'm going to throw some down the toilet then.
Great, perfect. That's all I want.
So these don't even... You can't try and embarrass me for saying these things.
Sure. I wouldn't do that.
Liar, Liar.
With Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
Nah.
Kung Fu Hustle.
Kung Fu Hustle. What's that?
Stephen Chow. Kind of a... Yeah, Kung Fu flick, but...
It's... Yeah, do you know, it's very possible that this is one of the deepest Forget You Forgots ever, or it's possible that I haven't seen it, and I can't confirm. So I'm going to have to say no.
Knives Out.
Never watched it, but I've been meaning to, you know? I've been meaning to. But then every time I sort of see it and I'm reminded to, it's Glass Onion, and I think I should probably watch the other one first.
You should, and yeah, and then really decide if you want to even bother with the second one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Throw another one down the loo for me, come on.
This is the last one.
Yeah.
Inside Man.
You mean directed by...
Spike Lee. Starring Jodie Foster and your man Clive Owen. It's always floating around.
I think I haven't seen it, you know.
What? It's got Clive in me.
Do you know what?
I love Clive.
I own it on DVD.
Of course you do.
I bought it back in the day when I was buying DVDs. And because it's got a great cast, right? It's also got Chiwetel Ejiofor, Willem Dafoe, Christopher Plummer, and obviously Denzel.
It's nuts that you haven't seen that. Well, yeah, I mean, that went without saying.
Let me just watch the trailer quickly to check if I haven't seen it. Hold on. From Universal Pictures. I've seen this.
Yes. Ooh.
I have seen this film.
Yeah.
I have seen it.
This is the richest of rich plums.
That might be the deepest plum of all time. That might be the most Forget You Forgot movie of all time, because I knew that I owned it. I knew what it was. And I thought I hadn't seen it.